America, and to the rest of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting and post-guilty plea edition of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi. Teresa Sammons may be joining us a little later. We're not sure yet. Depends how drunk she is. But, yeah. December 1st, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Indictment Day.
Yeah. Oh, there's a bunch of fun stuff we got up today, especially some stuff that literally happened just this morning. And we'll get to all that, but at this point, I'm just going to say, there's really not a doubt left in my mind now.
Yeah.
Not a single one. But we'll get to that one. Of course, we're also going to be having some entertainment news. We've also going to have... let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. Apparently cookie dough may be bad for you. What a shock.
Yeah, I thought that would have been obvious, but okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was established long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
there's new reasons.
Yeah. Also, we got a story from Marvel about their new EIC. Apparently, wrote a bunch of comics for them under a Japanese synonym about 13 years ago, and it's just now becoming a big news. But you'll find out about all that and more on this oh so fun edition of Let's Weekend. So. Start us off properly. Phil, what have you been doing this week, other than, you know, feeling like utter shit?
Yeah, well, I have been doing that. You know, sleep is something that I remember doing at one point. Yeah, hopefully tonight I'll be getting some of that. So that will be nice. Apart from that, well, I finished Artemis by Andy Weir. That was actually surprisingly very good book.
Well, considering what he had to follow, what he had to follow up, yeah. I mean,
yeah, this one's a little bit of a murder mystery, a lot of science, a little bit of economics, a little bit of unintended consequences. Yeah, it's really good. Jazz as a character is really quite fun. Yeah, I like the way it's told. It's got the Andy Weir wit. Yeah, top marks, highly recommended.
Yep.
And apart from that, I've been playing a bit of Forza Motorsport 7 here and there when, you know, because it's one of those games I can just kind of do a couple of races here and there and not really think too hard about it. So
it can be as bite-sized as you need it to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've been playing a bit of that. Almost finished the Forza Drivers Cup, which will unlock the Elite events. So I'll have more stuff to do after that. So, yay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's been it for me. How about you, Pat?
What free time that I've had this week that I wasn't asleep for has pretty much been dedicated to Game of the Year prep because obviously I got to play a lot of the stuff that I'd missed out on Black Friday. And my Game of the Year picture is definitely coming together better. And I think I've got the list down to 10 games. Now it's just a matter of putting them in order. So that's probably where the next couple weeks are going to go. But this was a pretty damn good year for gaming, I have to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking forward to sort of getting it all planned out and figuring out for myself what I'm putting in the number one spot because I really don't know yet.
Yep.
So that's been my week.
Play a little bit more Nier.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out pretty quickly.
Oh, I will.
All right. Well, Chris, what about you?
I guess to sort of start off, my credit card fraud stuff has all been settled. I got a new card and all that. Weird thing is I logged into my account just to double check it when I was wondering what was going on. It's like, oh, all my money's back. And I got a letter the next day. It's like, hey, we got one of your refunds settled. Just like this paper is like, hey, you got your $11 back. I was like, I know I looked at the account. It's the whole point of the account. But yeah, cards here, all that good stuff. So I bought something yesterday, so it all works. As for other stuff, I watched the first and only season of Westworld that's out right now. And if I didn't know it was based on a Michael Crichton book, it's written all over the way that story is.
Movie.
Was there a book?
No, there was no book. It was a completely original movie that he wrote and directed.
I don't know about original. It's got his stamp all over it of, hey, they got some incredible new technology to create this cool park, and it all goes haywire.
Yep. Except in the original movie, it wasn't just completely focused on the Wild West. They also had like a part of it that was like based on ancient Rome. They had one that was part on like, I guess, Imperial Japan. It was
that stuff.
It was a very weird 70s movie.
Yeah.
It's honestly not held up all that well, to be honest.
Yeah, I would like to watch it just to see what the source material is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it very much has all the hallmarks of a Michael Crichton work.
Yeah.
And sort of coming off of Game of Thrones, this has about as much of the nudity and violence as Game of Thrones, though I would say the nudity is way higher.
Yeah,
because there are just storage vaults of naked hosts.
Yep.
Because, of course.
Because they're robots, basically. Yeah. It's just they're very human-looking.
Yeah. But still, it's the idea that they have a bunch of, you know, extras and such just standing in a room. Those are the shots they record is humorous to me.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do today? Oh, I just stood in a room naked.
Yeah.
That was kind of, for a super high-tech facility, they sure have a lot of floors that have poor electricity.
That's what I was going to say, because apparently, like a lot of storage facilities are basically, like, leaking and, like,
yeah, they talk
almost
about early
flash
on,
flood
like,
shit.
The cooling has failed.
Mm-hmm.
But also, just the electricity is horror style, but nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just flickering on and off, and it's like, something going to happen? No. This guy just goes to a computer and looks up stuff. It's like, okay. Yep. That's just weird. And they do some really interesting stuff with the story, though. It's also goes nuts right at the end.
Oh, yeah.
In ways that I'm not I might have to rewatch it just to see what was going on. But yeah, it's pretty neat, though. The second season is going to be happening for a while. Like I said, maybe late 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. It's got a weird long delay, but yeah, it's neat. Especially seeing some of the revelations and just seeing some of the actors I know that I like a lot, like the guy that plays Bernard, who was also in one of the what is the Jennifer Lawrence movies based on the books that are Battle Royale clones?
Oh, Hunger Games?
Yeah, he's in one of those. And I like how he never changes his look. He just has that kind of same short beard and the glasses. And is like, yeah, sure, just take all that. We're not going to change you for that.
What did you think about Anthony Hopkins?
I was happy he was still alive. his character is interesting. Very much kind of in the same way that is it Richard that's in Jurassic Park?
Or is it
I forget which one of them, but yeah, he kind of in the eccentric creators kind of lost his touch with reality a little bit, though. At least with the movie, the Jurassic Park guy is a little bit more willing to say the shit's fucked up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pretty neat series. I'm curious to see what they do with a second season. I also watched Spider-Man Homecoming. It's one of the movies I got from Black Friday. And it's really good.
Hmm.
Very much kind of the most fun of all the Spider-Man movies that have come out from Sony. In a sense that It also gets a good boost from just being tied into the Marvel Universe. So, like, the notion of, oh, there are these guys with Avengers masks robbing a bank. And Spider-Man can be like, oh, hey, I know all these guys. You're not them. And just beats them up. Is pretty cool. And Michael Keaton does a good job as the Vulture. And sort of kind of humanizing that, the villain role a bit, because he's kind of, the very beginning of the movie, he is part of a crew, or he's running a crew that is gathering all the trash and debris and such after one of the big Avenger fights. I don't know which one is specifically supposed to take after. But yeah, they're cleaning up like alien debris and all that, and before the government takes over, and they kind of smuggle some of the stuff out, start building like super high tech weapons and such, and start trying to sell those to make their money and sort of keep doing that stuff. And obviously Spider-Man gets wind of it and sort of decides to take action, even though Tony Stark doesn't want him to. Because he thinks he's not ready for that sort of high-level stuff yet. Even to the point where he takes his suit away. And so you see him in that, the weird-looking handmade getup he has later on. Which I had only come into knowledge of that stuff from Marvel Heroes Omega. So I figured he went from the homemade to the actual suit. But no, it's kind of in the opposite order. But yeah, it's really fun. The friends that he has are pretty good, especially his best friend, who is a completely huge nerd. So he cannot even handle the notion that his best friend is actually Spider-Man. Just constantly bothers him with questions about things he can do and all that stuff, as well as just constantly asks him, "Can I just tell everybody you're Spider-Man?" It comes close at times, but yeah, it's pretty well done. So I'm looking forward to watching some of the other stuff. I got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 to watch as I start to weirdly piece together this whole cinematic universe with the new Avengers coming up at some point next year. Because watching that trailer was like, okay, where did all this stuff come from? Where did all these people come from? Because there's like 10 different movies converging into one.
Yeah.
That's like a big problem. But as for games, I've been playing more Horizon Zero Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of after Day Zero updates, I was playing some more Assassin's Creed Origins, and it scratched enough of the Horizon itch. I was like, you know, I'm just going to go play Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And have been kind of mainlining it a bit. Managed to get from sort of some of the first areas you're in to the big city, Meridian. And that is a pretty cool place. Especially when you're kind of used to all the kind of post-apocalyptic areas, where it's sort of just ruins of buildings that are covered in plant life and all that, to like a city that's kind of mostly still intact. And getting back in touch with some of the characters you meet very early on that visited the main village for the from other villages, and sort of interacting with some of the other sort of tribes of people.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of seeing some of all of that strife that there is. But yeah, so far so good. And look forward to playing some more of that. And definitely when you go to that city, they tell you, hey, don't stray too far off the road. The main road that they have there. And it's like, yeah, that's a good idea. So I did that and ran into the first flying enemies I ever seen, and they fucked me up because I had no idea how to deal with them. Because there's like
the birds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to hit them with a couple of fire arrows, and then when they plummet back to the ground, you have to stab them.
Yeah, this was kind of on a cliffside, so I was like hanging around in a tree that was kind of keeping me safe.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So things got bad pretty quickly once I couldn't stop keeping safe in that. But I do like some of the spontaneous stuff that happens when you have people, like soldiers and such, just heading out of the village every once in a while. And they'll just run into some of the other enemies and just start fighting them on their own. And it's fun to sort of get into those battles. Especially so they don't steal XP that I could get off of them. But yeah, that's been pretty fun. Yeah, I've been fighting a lot of weird enemies that are new, like long legs, and a couple others that are primarily around that area. At least they start first showing up there. Yeah, it's really cool. Look forward to playing some more of that. And I finally saw Marvel Heroes Omega off. That finally shut off, I think, Tuesday? Monday, maybe? I forget which day it was. But just randomly turned off the servers in, during the middle of the day. So as much as people were like, oh, it's going to end on Friday, no, it was a few days after that. Which is the one bright side is I got a good bit of free space back on my each of my consoles and the PC. So that's good. It's like 25 gigs
yeah.
space back. So it's like, well, no longer have to worry about this game.
Yeah.
Still fun to play that. Shame it's gone. It's a shame that those devs couldn't maybe start their own independent sort of Diablo-style RPG game.
No, it's sad, yeah.
Yeah. But hey, they don't have to work for a jerk anymore, so...
Yeah.
There's a bright side to that. And also been playing more of Super Lucky's Tale. It's still not great, but it's kind of okay enough that I'm just plowing through it. I've got like over 5,000 coins now. I don't know if I'm ever going to spend them on anything, or if they're just an infinite number that goes up. Because each one of the requirements for Clover in the levels is getting 300 coins in that level, which it's not too hard usually. But yeah, like if they serve no purpose, why is there a counter?
Yeah, they probably wanted to put a purpose in there and ran out of time, so maybe that's one of those things.
Maybe it oddly shows up like late in the game.
Yeah.
Like, hey, here, you can spend this money you've been accruing for weird reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, still annoyed by the controls. I did this one weird maze level that I picked up a carrot, and I was like, okay, I don't know what I got to do with this, but you can't drop it until you get it to wherever you need to take it. And it's like, I don't know where to take it. It was actually right near the where I got it, but I just went to try to play the rest of the level. It's like, oh, this is a weird challenge level where you have to just get through this maze holding this carrot and you can't really do anything. Nope. Eventually I got to a point where I couldn't really do anything else because I couldn't jump. I couldn't really collect anything or avoid attacks or anything like that. It's really weird. It's maybe the one bad part about that. Because I got a couple quests that are like that, like, hey, here's golems, return their heads to their bodies. It's like, okay, but you can't put the heads down. So if it's like, oh, there's something I want to get first, nope, you got to finish the thing. Or else you lose the ability to jump and do other things until you're done. So, yeah, just weird shit like that. It's not great. I also played a little more Cuphead, beat a couple more bosses. That's been good.
All right.
That's been pretty much it.
All right. Well, that's my turn. So I finished Horizon Zero Dawn. So I guess I'm going to go ahead and do the DLC when I can get it. But in the meantime, I've been playing more Stardew Valley. And like I said before, I get it. I completely understand why people love this game so much. It's absolutely just it's a very no stress type of game at all. Like it is so masterfully put together that it gives you all these incentives and all of these possibilities that you can pursue in the game, but at the same time, it lets you do all of it at your own pace. You know, there's no way to really lose. You can screw up pretty badly, but they always have ways of being able to get back.
Yeah.
To where you were. So, and you can pretty much play the thing pretty much indefinitely if you wanted to.
I think like the main storyline is 3 years.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been playing that. Also been just absolutely salivating over Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and hating the fact that I cannot play it until Christmas. Because pretty much all of the reviews have pretty much told me exactly what I wanted to know. That it's looks great, it plays pretty good, it's really well written, the voices and the dialogue are good. The only complaints I've heard is that, you know, the mechanics are a little complex and that you have to grind a little bit here and there. And so in other words, it's just like the original Xenoblade.
Basically, yeah.
So no problems there. But unfortunately, yeah, I still have to wait until the 25th. So... Yeah.
But you'll have some good gaming that day, though.
Well, yeah, I'll be having that, and of course, I'm getting the
Mario Odyssey with
the Mario Odyssey bundle. Yeah. So I'll have two games to play with, and then after that, of course, I'll still have a bunch of other stuff to play with it too. You know, there's frickin' Breath of the Wild, Arms, and then
Mario
of course
Kart Deluxe,
Mario Kart. There's all the downloadable stuff like Golf Story and Octopath Traveler's coming.
Yep.
Of course, Stardew Valley's going to be on there too.
that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's the game. That's the game that's pretty much probably going to get a lot of people killed. I'm going to be completely honest.
That and it will probably lose hundreds of hours of productivity.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, you can lose yourself just on the PC. Just imagine being able to carry that thing around with you. That's just it.
Yep.
The entire United States economy will suffer. But other than that, I have discovered that I 100% unironically love Vaporwave. I really do. it's basically, you know, when I first heard Saint Pepsi doing Enjoy Yourself, I'm like, that's it, I officially love this shit. do I really need to describe what Vaporwave is?
It might be helpful for some people.
Alright, do you guys remember something called C-Punk that was sort of like a minor thing a few years ago? A sort of like micro-genre in music that was like really obsessed with like not just aquatic things, but also like sort of early 90s PC imagery?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Vaporwave is kind of a continuation of that, but a bit... I don't know, more intelligent, I guess. Basically what it does is it's pretty much a genre of music that could only exist in the internet age, because it's basically a combination of not just music, but also visual and full motion video aesthetic that all combines into a single whole. Musically, what it is it's basically a kind of an offshoot of noise music, where you go back and you take like old like radio AM, you know, soft rock, Muzak, smooth jazz, you know, kind of vapid 80s pop, and use a bit of the old technique, what do they call it, the chop and screw effect. so that, you know, it's all remixed and it's given an additional, you know, it's remixed, it's slowed down a little bit to sort of give it a sort of sense of desolate space. And then usually they'll add extra bass or percussion into it. And what you end up getting is you'll get that, and along with visually is usually lots of imagery related to, you know, again, 90s PC and internet culture, video games, television, sort of collaged and slapdashed together. And as far as like as far as videos are concerned, they'll use things like old TV commercials, or like St. Pepsi's Enjoy Yourself. He uses he basically uses Moon Man, you know, from the old McDonald's adverts. You know, there's another, you know, probably the most famous vaporwave song is called, I think it's called Macintosh 420. And it's basically a Diana Ross song that's slowed down, so it sounds like boom, dun, 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 dun. You've heard this.
I think I need to investigate this.
Yeah. Another one I love is by a guy named I think his name's Iconic, and it's a song called Point of No Return, and it's good stuff. And Teresa's with us now. So,
Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Teresa. Hey, how are you guys?
Mostly good.
Are you still able to stand?
I am. That was a really big glass, though. I am. I was able to stand and get out of there about the time somebody started crooning House of the Rising Sun.
Nope.
Yeah. And you got out while you still could, so.
Yeah.
We're actually just, we're on the what are we up to section, because you want to go ahead and tell us what you've been up to this week?
Blowing up Facebook. I've been doing a good bit of that. But as far as gaming goes, I have been playing Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, you guys kind of figure that, yep. Right? That's no big shock. Played that a lot. I also worked on the Pokemon special event, and definitely got not Heracross. Who was the other? I got so many of them, and I'm blanking. Psyduck. No, not Psyduck. It's the Leek dude. Farfetch'd. Got many Farfetch'd. Actually got one 100% IV Farfetch'd, which was definitely a big highlight for that. So Farfetch'd was a region-locked one, and, you know, we couldn't get it unless everybody caught, like, 3 billion Pokemon in a one-week period, and, of course, that happened quickly. And so we had Farfetch'd for, like, 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And now Ho-Oh is out, but, you guys, I'm so sick of mobile gaming. did that. I finished up Blackadder. That had a hell of an ending. Did not.
They always do.
This, the very final one, the very final one was much different. And it reminded me a lot of MASH. So, what else did I do? I watch a lot of shit. I've been watching Hugh and Laurie. QI, that's what it is, that Brit show, with, again, Stephen Fry. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like a lot of, like, all over the place kind of stuff, not much Final Fantasy, kind of, I don't know what happened there, but it just stopped happening.
We'll get back to it.
We will. I mean, everybody does that. You kind of, oh, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Origins, that's my first Assassin's Creed. And I like it. It's visually beautiful. I'm not going to finish it. I can already tell you that. Does anybody ever finish these games? Is that even a
very thing? Few, to be Josh honest.
Does. Who
I
does?
Mean, the re-
yeah. Josh on, oh, okay. on our site. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, but Josh is a very special individual very because dedicated. The truth of the matter is, to be able to truly finish Assassin's Creed games completely, you basically have to have just the most extreme same kind of CD.
Well, isn't it going to be like 200 hours or some crap by the time you're done? Mm. I mean, that
yeah. Is, I mean, there isn't just the campaign, though. There's like all the collectibles and shit and the side quests and all this other crap.
Yeah, the new one has like community events as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, oh,
well, by the way,
yeah.
By the way, Teresa, your Drivatar is really, really irritating.
Why? What's it doing?
Because she's like always, always in the lead, basically.
Well, that is so goddamn inaccurate.
Yeah. It's like, that's not supposed to happen.
I only had 7 for a week, and I didn't even get to do it close to the amount of justice that I would have liked to. But, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't even need you to play them anymore.
No.
You know, kinda... apparently not. I'm gonna be better if I never play it again. That's great. Yeah. But we did order a Switch, so that has shipped. And we are fucking not waiting for Christmas. It's not going to happen. So we have Breath of the Wild for that, and we already got Mario Odyssey. And I don't have the Switch yet, but at the library I have Cave Story on hold. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that gets here soon, because they only hold that shit for me for like 4 days.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of good stuff coming, but not a lot of actual great gaming going on right now. So kind of just muddling through life, and next week is a wash because I'm in Kentucky again.
Mm.
So I got a 9-day break. Mm. And then I go back
to the grind.
Yeah. So clearly my Facebook is still blowing up because I have a cousin that I haven't seen in probably 30 years sending me a message.
Mm.
Oh, guess what? It's chainmail.
Oh, lovely.
You thought the 90s left.
Oh, God. You know, this is going to sound really fucking old school, but I remember when I was a kid and they were postal chainmail things.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I know. Yeah. Chain letters. I know.
Yeah, that's what they were. Letters. What the hell are those?
Nobody does that shit anymore.
No, God, no.
Only old people.
I know, and I had to send thank you letters to all the old people that, you know, gave flowers and donations and shit for my grandmother's funeral.
I wouldn't know how to check their email.
Oh, God. I wouldn't give them my email address. Do you know what would happen to me?
It would be unusable in 2 days.
Even more of it was the Grinch kicking a snowball at me, and I'm supposed to kick the snowball back.
Or you get all the racist email they want to send you about the real Obama.
Right.
Well, they're putting Muslim imagery on our stamps.
Oh, my God.
They're gonna take over.
They took our guns. They took our jobs. Mm-hmm. Ember berries. Yeah, I went the wrong way. So that's pretty much it.
Back to our
scheduled show.
Yeah. All right, well, with that out of the way, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And you know what? This week, we're going to do one that pretty much I think everybody in this group probably already knows about, but there's probably still quite a few people out there that don't. And it's about what is considered to be the first recorded Easter egg in the world of video games.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know this one, so.
Adventure.
All right. Shut up, you're ruining it.
So I was really late.
Yeah, you were right.
Yeah, so who here remembers a game from the Atari 2600 called Adventure?
Like everybody.
It was one of those games that pretty much I think everybody who had an Atari 2600 back in the day had one.
Yeah.
Had a copy of it at some point. It was basically, I mean, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good example of how, you know, back in the early days of gaming, you know, there was a lot of imagination involved on the part of the player.
Well, yeah, when the dragons look like ducks.
Yeah. When the dragon looks like ducks. When the sword looks like an arrow for some reason. But basically what it was. Yeah. Basically what you had to do is you played a brave adventurer, which was a square, That had to go on an epic quest. They had to go, and they had to go to these different castles. And in each castles, they had to get a different artifact. So, for example, like the previously mentioned sword, there was also, a bridge that you had to get. There was also, what else was there? I think there was, a bow and arrow or something as well. And there was also, of course, the final artifact you had to get, which was the chalice, which was, it was a cup, basically. The magician stole, and he hid it somewhere away in one of the castles, and you had to return it to the Golden Castle, which is where you start the game off. And so you had to go out to the other, I guess there was three castles, and in each castle you had one particular, you had two enemies, really. You had the dragon. There was a yellow one, a green one, and a red one. The red one could actually move much faster than the other two. And also, I'm pretty sure the dragons weren't limited by walls either. They could actually... Yeah, one of those. and also there's a bat. And he actually isn't even limited to the castles. He can just roam around freely. And it actually can actually pick up you, the player, and just carry you off and drop you out in the middle of frickin' nowhere. And so ultimately you had to go all this, get the Golden Chalice, take it back to the Golden Castle, and once you got back in the Golden Castle with the Chalice, that was the end of the game. Not terribly complex, I know, but this was like 1980, so yeah. What the hell are you gonna do? But the gentleman behind this game was a very talented and imaginative developer by the name of Warren Robinette. And he worked on the game for exactly 1 year. And apparently that whole deal was a hell of a time because he basically had to deal with the fact that the Atari 2600's hardware kind of sucked. Like, it was really sucked for trying to program anything outside of really simple shit. But there was another problem as well. The management in Atari were, assholes, to be frank. And right around this time, they started doing something that, by modern standards, would probably land these fuckers in court. But because of the nature of the industry at that time, nobody really cared. They were going back and they were removing the credits for the creators in their products.
Just like Kojima.
Yeah. Basically, they were doing it so they could prevent comparators from identifying and luring away programmers. And this actually had bigger implications than just this one instance, because David Crane, Larry Kaplan, Alan Miller, and Bob Whitehead would actually all leave Atari and go on. And because, not only were they not getting any recognition, they weren't getting fucking royalties either.
Nope.
So they all went, jumped ship, and they went and formed a little company called Activision.
And they had to sue Atari to be able to release games on there.
Yeah. And
there wasn't the whole concept of third parties.
Yeah, that was literally like the first third party in Western gaming, at least.
Wait, somebody else releases a game on our console? What?
Yeah. But as for Robinette, Robinette was basically just really pissed off at Atari, but he figured out, you know what? They won't put this game, put my name on the box, which for those of you who don't know, that's one of the things Activision did, is that they would put the designer's name on the box and actually name them in the commercials too. So what he did is he went into the game, okay, so I'm looking at the Wikipedia article here. It says basically, within Adventure, the Easter egg is located inside the Black Castle catacombs on difficulty level 2 or 3. It's embedded in the south wall of a sealed chamber where there is an invisible one-pixel object that you can actually go through. And when you go through it, this is what you see. It's a little vertical meshes. It says created by Warren Robinette. That is literally right there, the first Easter egg in console gaming history.
Yep.
And with good reason.
Yeah. It was, and like I said, it's surprisingly difficult to find, too. Like, you literally have to, you either have to be really OCD about everything in that game, or somebody has to tell you. Because, again, it's a one pixel opening that is literally invisible to the naked eye.
Mm, yeah. And, like, there was rumblings that Atari was going to try to, recall it and remove it, but
yeah,
didn't in the end.
Nope. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
And that was a crazy era of games when there was literal piracy, where rival developers would get a copy of your arcade cabinet and literally mm-hmm. try and reverse engineer the game to make their own clones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole, there's a lot of literature that's been written about that era of gaming and how just completely chaotic it was.
Because pot was smoked at Atari.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pot? And in fact, yeah, and the fact, not just that, but you had this fact that Atari was essentially trying to be the monopoly
mm-hmm.
on gaming at the time, and basically did just incredibly sleazy shit to be able to do it. Yeah, and if you honestly think about it, they ultimately basically caused the great video game crash in the mid-80s. Yeah. So,
didn't get bought by Warner, so that didn't help.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, these people have no idea what games are.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to run our company.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
Not a goddamn.
Yeah. All right, so it is now time for the show proper. And we've got our assholes of the week. We actually have two candidates. The first one involves something that happened over in New York. Apparently a woman who was apparently raped by she accused a member of the New York Police Department as her rapist. And so 9 New York Police Department officers attempted to intimidate her out of pressing charges.
Oh, color me shocked on this one. Color me shocked. This, actually, I have a little story about this. A relative to me who is extremely close, like you possibly can't get any fucking closer than this relative, got stopped by an Illinois state trooper while on the job and was sexually assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. She would never say. She would never say, and she would never, she would never tell my grandfather the name of the officer either, because he is going to kill him.
Oh, he's going
to flat out kill him. And in order to avoid this kind of, behavior, she was actually dating a cop at the time, not a state policeman, but she called and he sent her immediately for the kit and whatnot. And, he said, you got to get out of town for a few months. And she had to flee her home for a few months. Yeah.
Was this in Kentucky?
She came and stayed with me in Kentucky.
Yeah.
No, this happened up here.
Oh, in Illinois?
Uh-huh. Oh. It can happen here.
All right. So according to the New York Post, it's actually 2 Brooklyn detectives that are accused of sexual assault here. Says here, the accuser's attorney says here, they came with 9 cops to intimidate her and her mom to discourage them from coming forward and reporting the rape and sexual assault. One officer in particular questioned Chambers' story at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn, where she had gone with her mom for a rape kit on September 15th, hours after the alleged rape and sexual assault. It was 10:45, apparently. And he kept saying to Anna and her mom, how do you know they were real cops? Didn't you make complaints about cops before? Yeah.
Oh, God. I can understand. So
here's what the accuser said. She shouted, they're talking to this woman's mother, these assholes with badges saying, you don't know what you're talking about, your daughter doesn't know what she's talking about, and then Chambers herself shouts back. Chambers, by the way, her name's Anna Chambers, is the one who was raped, and she's bringing this case forward. She says, I know what cops look like. They had guns, there were handcuffs, and the police radio was on.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty damning.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's great when cops stick together to protect themselves from things that they should be protected from, but to protect somebody, two somebodies from this bullshit, you know what? Fuck them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit too much union bullshit that goes on with cops.
I hope they get landed in jail for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I hope they do, too. And I hope it's pound me in the ass prison, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not administrative leave like what happened in the other situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but, as far as the intimidation thing goes, isn't that obstruction?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. But, well, this is the NYPD we're talking about.
Mm.
But guess what? They aren't our only, they're not our only candidates for Asshole of the Week. We've also got the James O'Keefe and the folks from Project Veritas. All right, so everybody knows by now, Roy Moore has basically been accused of some rather heinous sexual assault on teenage girls back when he was, you know, in his 30s, including a 14-year-old girl that he picked up outside of a courthouse, and, you know, his behavior of trolling malls and the local YMCA, trolling for young girls. Well, James O'Keefe and his asshole friends at Project Veritas decided they wanted to do, well, fuck, you know what they usually do, what their MO is. They try to make these fake sting operations by, you know, doing all the terrible shit. You know, folks come in lying, pretending there's something else, then selectively editing video so that, for example, they make you think that Planned Parenthood is selling baby body parts.
Mm-hmm.
But,
they picked the one story where the Washington Post has dozens of interviews.
Yeah.
So they say, oh, this doesn't fit this and this and this.
Yeah, so they sent in someone who was claimed to be a victim of Roy Moore, said that he actually got her pregnant and that she had to have the child aborted. Turns out it was all garbage. It was all a complete and utter lie. And, even though James O'Keefe tried to release the video and still do their standard MO, it didn't work because everybody knew it was garbage.
And they found some great things. The woman's name is Jamie Phillips.
Yeah.
They found a GoFundMe account from her, mm-hmm. which specifically says she was going to New York to work for a conservative company that was going to, you know, get one over on the liberals.
Mm-hmm.
All that sort of shit. And so they went, Washington Post went to James O'Keefe, sort of asked some questions about this. And there's a great video of the reporter that's going to talk to him. And he brought his own camera crew because he wanted to intimidate the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just keeps asking questions to James O'Keefe, and he refuses to answer any of them. Sort of about Jamie Phillips and all this other stuff. And he's just stonewalled.
Mm-hmm.
and it's hilarious to watch. And the great thing is that while they were recording, he did his own stuff after that. Then put up this big cut-up version. It's like, oh, we got him won over on the Washington Post. And it's like, no, here's the actual version of what happened.
Nice.
Yeah, so they try to claim victory over Washington Post. It's like, no. Nobody but your stooges that follow you
mm-hmm.
think anything like that happened.
Yeah. And you know who owns the Washington Post?
Who's that?
Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, the Jeff Bezos Washington Post?
Yeah, so I don't think that's a fight you want to get into.
No.
You. He could have you killed.
O'Keefe has a ton of history of doing stupid shit.
Yeah. Well, he's also a convicted felon, so There's also that.
I think he's only had one victory. That was getting Acorn shut down.
Yeah.
Even though it technically should not have happened because it was fake.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this... It's one thing to... try to get these, one-off sting operations. It's another one. What you're essentially doing is trying to discredit all the other accusers of their claims as what, so that you can help this, at least attempted pedophile, get voted in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
God. You know, I often feel really, really bad for guys. All you guys, because there is this handful of absolute fucking slime dragging your entire gender through the mud.
Yeah.
You know,
did you see the Matt Lauer thing?
I didn't.
Yeah, he got nailed. And apparently part of it, he had a button installed in his office under the desk that locked the door from the inside.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So he would invite women in, lock the door without having to get up, and then do whatever the hell he was trying to do.
Yep,
that's grade A sleaze right there.
Oh yeah,
I guess the one good thing is he's not getting his $30 million severance.
Nope. Good. But all right. So moving on from our assholes of the week, we've got our ass clown of the week.
Because what else can you call it?
Yeah. And you guessed who it was.
Oh,
it's
geez.
Our current unfortunate president, who first thing he did is he has actually disavowed and said that the now infamous Access Hollywood tape is fake, even though he previously acknowledged that it was all 100% true.
I don't know why he's saying it's a fake, considering it didn't affect anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in Trump's world, he controls the facts. Yeah.
Speaking of which, that's not the main thing he's getting pinned for this week. No, he did something really, really stupid and frankly irresponsible to a level that I'm still shocked we're surprised by this shit. But he somehow, and I don't even know how he managed to get a hold of these.
I want to say... It was Ann Coulter retweeted these, so they obviously popped into his feed.
Yeah.
it was something like one of those people.
Yeah, it was retweeted three anti-Muslim conspiracy videos from Britain First. If you don't know who Britain First is the hate group who one of their members went and stabbed to death a Labour MP last year.
Yeah. That was crazy unfortunate.
It was Joe Cox. That was her name. The one that got stabbed. So just to really quickly go through, all three of these videos are completely debunked, and it's very easy to find out what they actually are. So, for example, the first one that claims to be a Muslim person, a Muslim immigrant, beating up a Dutch guy on crutches, he wasn't Muslim. He wasn't an immigrant. He was just an asshole.
Yeah.
The other video, one of the other videos, the one about them supposedly pushing people off a roof, that is actually in Egypt around, I think, what was it, like 2008, 2009, after the coup, when the President Barzai, the guy who was in the Muslim Brotherhood, was deposed.
Yeah.
And apparently those people getting pushed are Muslim Brotherhood supporters.
Mm.
So it wasn't it was basically it was a Civil War related type dispute. And then there was the third one about that Muslim guy who broke the statue of the Virgin Mary.
Mm.
Now, that whole video is of course true, but there is a thing, there is an attaché to it that people forget to mention, which is that the guy who broke the statue and the guy that was next to him in that video, and presumably the guy that was filming it, they are all members of an Islamist group that is getting its funding from the U.S. State Department.
Yeah.
Yep.
Full stop.
I like that the Dutch crutch video.
Mm-hmm.
It's two white guys.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a Muslim being on. No, it's they're two Dutch white boys.
Pretty sure that's not Muslim. Yep.
Yeah. And so, this one pretty much, I think, is the one that kind of just – this event here is basically the point where even freaking Breitbart and Fox News were like, no, this is going too far.
When you got Paul Joseph Watson saying, hey, people, you probably shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, someone might want to tell whoever is running Trump's Twitter account this morning that retweeting Brit First is not great optics.
Yeah.
This guy
that was a rather diplomatic way of putting it.
Every time I see Trump shitty news on Twitter, that guy's all over it saying Trump is the greatest.
Yeah.
He's saying, we probably should do this.
I should do that. Yeah.
You're going to blow our cover.
Yeah. You guys saw that the Onion put up a headline. It says something like, Trump retweets fake news or whatever, and it was absolutely a legitimate headline. And this is where we are in life, where the Onion is now a credible news source. No longer satire.
Completely unintentionally.
This is post-satire life, people.
So,
yeah. Going back a little bit, you know who donated money to Project Veritas? The Trump Foundation.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, by the way, if there's anything about all this recent shit that I love is going on Breitbart and looking at the comment sections, because if you want to see a group of absolutely delusional human beings of just absolute top of the barrel looking the other way, putting their fingers in their ears going, la, 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 I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah. When you got Theresa May even shitting on Trump.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which is calling the kettle black.
And apparently it's actually meant that they have canceled Trump's visit to London over this shit.
Which that's coming from the person who is refusing to pay all the money that Manchester asked for after the terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hey, two assholes getting Twitter arguments.
Yep. And then finally, to kind of sort of wash the taste out of our mouths from that just ass garbage, we have our hero of the week, which is the first woman with Down syndrome to compete in the Miss USA state pageant.
Yeah, so this is Michaela Holmgren, who is 22 in Minnesota, so she competed the Minnesota pageant.
Mm-hmm.
She obviously has Down syndrome. She won the Minnesota Miss Amazing pageant, which is for women with disabilities, 2015. I guess she wanted to take on a bigger challenge, so she bugged her mom to let her apply for the Miss Minnesota pageant. And I think the whole thing here is that she probably knew she wasn't going to win it, but she did win two awards. She won, where are they at? She won the Spirit of Miss USA Award and the Director's Award. Obviously for sort of competing in this pageant in spite of her her issues, obviously. But still doing it a great job.
Yeah.
And I guess word got around in Minnesota that through one of the local papers that she was competing, and so a bunch of mothers brought their daughters who also had Down syndrome to come watch the event and see that, you know, they don't have to necessarily aim low just because of the issues they have.
Yeah, so it's a good story.
Yeah, nice and heartwarming and positive.
Yeah.
And typically going against what you think of as typical pageant atmospheres of exclusivity and snobbishness.
Well, moving on from there, we now have the proper show proper, and we have our first main story of the week, which is North Korea now has the best missile to date that they now have, their best missile test, suggesting that it can hit all of the U.S. mainland.
Hooray.
And I'm guessing that also means Canada as well. So,
yeah, I don't know if there's a map plan here, but yeah, basically it can hit the tip of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
They're suggesting that it actually went up into space about 2,800 miles up.
Mm-hmm.
And took about a 53-minute flight before landing into the Sea of Japan for this particular test.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that it could travel about 13,000 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of whether they can probably fit a sizable nuclear warhead onto there.
Hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for the record, it needs to be said, apparently North Korea has a no first strike policy. Now, how much faith I have in that is another question entirely.
I'm sure Japan feels super confident being the target of all of these.
Yeah. Fortunately, none of this stuff has actually landed within the Japanese mainland itself. In fact, most of the time, like the last time when it said it flew over Japan, what they forgot to mention is that it flew over Japanese territorial waters.
Yeah, I don't think they've been deliberately aiming for the mainland. They've just kind of been off to the side there.
No, they're just sending a message.
Yeah. And unfortunately, our current president is not helping matters.
Yeah, I know. That's where that no first strike doesn't fucking matter.
You mean the guy that keeps calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man?
Yeah.
Isn't helping things?
No.
God.
But that was probably going to be like one of our biggest and probably main story of the week if it weren't for the shit that went down this morning. In which Michael Flynn officially pled guilty to lying to the FBI and has said that he is now fully cooperating with the Mueller probe. And from what he's been saying, Jared Kushner is going to be the next to go.
It's all falling down around him.
Yep. And if Kushner goes,
Kushner is just about the first thing that he did.
Yeah,
almost immediately.
Like apparently, Kushner was the one who actually ordered Flynn to get in contact with the Russians.
Yeah.
And guess who Jared Kushner is working for?
Yes.
So, at this point,
his father-in-law.
Yep.
Yeah. So at this point, there really is no doubt, is there?
Nope.
It's all true.
It's all been subverted.
Wow. You know, it's at this point I can pretty much say pretty confidently that President Trump's doomsday is on the horizon.
Yep. It took a year for Nixon, and Trump managed to, beat that out.
And,
yeah, but at least Nixon did some good things. Trump hasn't done shit that's positive for anybody.
And I guess really just – I guess the worst part about this is that everybody's happy that we now know for a fact that this shit went down. But the fact that it did went down and they almost succeeded with it frankly makes me ill.
Yeah.
Your entire democratic system was basically completely exploited and subverted. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's completely irrelevant. Now, granted, the DNC didn't help themselves at all this year, so
No,
they really did not.
Yeah, it was kind of a low bar. So.
I mean, again, I cannot repeat this enough. The Republican candidate was going to be Donald Trump, and the Democrats still lost.
It had to be somebody that basically been in a 30-year-long smear campaign.
Mm. Yeah, and it had to be nobody else but her, because they apparently, we've heard it before, basically by that point, it had basically turned into the Hillary cult.
Yep. So.
But, yeah, so, at this point, it really is just borrowed time.
Yeah.
Once Manafort went down, we kind of knew that was really sort of the first domino that was getting ready to fall.
Hmm.
And now the Flynn's next, and next one's probably going to be Jared. It's possible Ivanka's going to end up getting it too, because apparently she was in the room when all this shit was going down.
Hmm.
And eventually it's all going to lead back up to Trump himself.
Yep.
But, if it doesn't get better, because we got more awful shit. So, right now tonight, the Senate is voting on the tax bill. Like an hour after they actually gave the still not finished tax bill, which is like a good 416 pages to senators.
Mm-hmm.
So they only had like an hour to read it.
Not a new practice.
Oh, it gets better, because it's full of chicken scratch.
Yeah, they wrote a lot in the margins of this thing.
Shocking.
Before they did the photocopying. And people were like, what the fuck is this saying?
It is completely illegible. Like, you know doctor writing? It's worse than doctor writing.
Ooh.
It's we gotta get this done in an hour writing.
You know, if they turn this shit in to their community college teacher, it would get fucking rejected. Yeah. What is this fresh fucking bullshit?
Yeah, there's a senator from Montana. There's a nice little video of him like, hey, here's the bill that we're going to be voting on.
Uh-huh.
Here's how huge it is. Slams it onto this table.
Yeah.
Show you how much heft there is. And then it's like, oh, here it is. Nope. Here's the actual first page. And here's this chicken scratch. I can read one word where it says add.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is
basically
like,
it's supposed to say add this new language. And then there's what's supposed to be the additional writing added to the bill, but it's completely illegible.
Yeah.
And it's going to affect the tax code for the next 10 years.
And keep in mind, they haven't even finished writing it.
Apparently not.
Yeah, there's somebody here that says, as a former school superintendent, I know that a term paper submitted like this would never pass. Neither should this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, however, this is not unprecedented. They have done shit like this before. Completely legally and with no repercussions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron Johnson.
There's a lot more people paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin says, you don't really need to read this kind of legislation.
Mostly what? Because you can't.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Trump's going to be like, nobody knew tax code was so hard. No, that's everything. People, that's why they have services and programs and all this shit, just do it all for you.
That's why the actual American tax code is like 40 volumes long.
Yeah, even the IRS has no way of keeping up with all the changes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And don't believe that isn't by design either.
No, of course it is.
Oh Lord. As far as everyone knows right now, they've got 51 votes that'll be in favor of it. Bob Corker backed out at the last minute and said he wouldn't. So, for this not to pass, you would need two more Republicans to back off.
Hmm.
McCain said he was fine with it, so he's going to vote for it.
But it's then
like
again,
this is the thing you've been campaigning against for the last couple months is getting back to some semblance of order.
Hmm. Yeah. And Teresa just logged out, I think.
Yeah.
There she is.
She's back.
Sorry. I don't know what happened there.
That was weird.
Yeah.
All right, you there, Teresa?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So we got more stupidity.
Yeah. All right. So on top of that, the Trump administration has announced that they want to privatize our intelligence covert ops with a Montana corporation.
Guess which what town in Montana? Whitefish.
Mm-hmm.
Same one where the electric company that was supposed to bring electric back to Puerto Rico. A town that has 6,500 people in it.
Yep.
Why the hell is the government so fascinated by companies in this town?
Probably because somebody's got holdings there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the people in the Trump administration is from there.
Yeah.
It's not even, it's so transparent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not even, like, they're not even trying at this point.
It's the fact is that not only is he just utterly, you know, just utterly crooked, it's that he's not even competent about it.
No.
He's not even good at hiding it.
Yeah. Also, privatizing intelligence, really bad idea.
Extremely bad idea. We already tried to do private military companies, and...
Yeah, that went well.
It's like the government can't keep their security in order.
Yeah.
Why the hell are we offloading this stuff to the private sector?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Ugh. Lots of stupidity. Just more ammunition, from what I see, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. This next one. This one was kind of a... I think this guy first showed up, I think, last week, and then he sort of became news again this week. So the New York Times, for whatever reason, decided to profile this guy who was a neo-Nazi. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of understand what the article writer was trying to do. He was trying to give the sort of terrifying idea of, you know, there are Nazis about and they may be your next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
But they completely failed on that regard. They actually ended up making this...
We already know that.
Yeah. They basically ended up making this guy look kind of good. And inadvertently normalized this type of behavior. Well, comeuppance is sweet because he's not only lost his job, he's now homeless as well.
Yeah.
Gee, you out yourself as a Nazi. It seems like it has ramifications to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Consequences.
Yeah, so he, his wife, and her brother were working at a grill and draft house in New Carlisle, Ohio, I think it is. And they got fired, all three of them. And they were in a rental home and got kicked out of that as well.
Yeah, because apparently we're at the point now where Nazis aren't cool.
No.
We're not tolerating that anymore.
Not at all.
And they were cool.
No, they never were. But
Not until before the Nazis became the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That might have been the only time.
But yeah.
But yeah, I guess he is a founding member of the Traditionalist Worker Party, a group that participated in contentious, racially charged marches in, guess where? Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So he's part of one of those people.
Yeah.
That says they fight for, quote, fight for the interests of white Americans, of people who for decades have been abandoned by the system and actively attacked by globalists and traitorous politicians.
On what planet, I'm wondering.
Planet Nazi. No, what's happened is the other people that are being oppressed are being oppressed slightly less over those decades. There's one more thing I wanted to point out about this.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So, obviously, he doesn't have a job to support himself or his family, and I found out this thing existed, so they have a crowdfunding site for Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
It's called GoFundMe.
Okay, that's a thing.
And I guess the Nazis have raised about $8,000 for him.
Wow.
I'm just
baffled.
They called it GoFundMe.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh hey, we hate the Jews. We're just going to take GoFundMe. We're going to turn it Jewish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody needs to trick those motherfucking Nazis and get 8,000 bucks of their own and then donate it to something that would really fucking piss them off.
Yeah.
The Eli Wiesel Center for Holocaust Research or something like that.
That would be lovely. Lovely. Yeah.
But, all right. So, moving on from there, we unfortunately need to now revisit the shit show that was Charlottesville, which unfortunately resulted in several protesters being injured and one being killed. So, there was an independent review that was done of the police response to all that shit, and... no shock. Basically, Charlottesville's police basically shit the bed.
Shocking.
Yeah. So, the police department officers did not have adequate protective gear. Keep protesters and counter protesters separate. Several lieutenants said they were uncomfortable directing officers from another agency, given the lack of introduction, training, and prior preparation. Law enforcement allowed white nationalists and counter-protesters to arm themselves with deadly weapons. Hey, that's a big one. When violence was most prevalent, Charlottesville commanders pulled officers back to a protected area of the park where they remained for over an hour as people in the large crowd fought on Market Street. City officials sent conflicting messages about the protest, with some, including the mayor, consistently discouraging attendance. Others said it was important for residents to visibly voice their opposition to the white supremacist group. The response to the Friday night torchlight event was woefully inadequate, even for a small campus police department. And the final one, the University of Virginia Police Department, was woefully inadequate, even for a small campus police department during the Friday night. Oh. And chanting Jews will not replace us. Yeah, they just kind of repeat themselves again, but... the key quote, this represents a failure of one of the government's core functions, the protection of fundamental rights. Law enforcement also failed to maintain order and protect citizens from harm, injury, and death. Charlottesville preserved neither of these principles on August 12th, which has led to deep distrust of government within this community. And basically that should be the signal that the chief of police should be let go immediately.
Yeah, usually.
This is all on him.
How that works.
Yeah, basically everything you knew that they fucked everything up.
Yeah. Now it's just all confirmation that they did exactly that.
Oh, Lord. Moving on to just... I actually like it. So, one of the attorney general candidates for Michigan put out a campaign video this week that suggests voting for somebody without a penis.
Yeah, basically... showing shots of various of the sexual harassers and such that have been outed in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, who are you going to trust not to show their penis? Me or the guy?
God! That's
this is Dana Nessel,
that's just
Democrat.
Awesome.
And she's
it.
Basically just going the direct route, saying, if I have no penis, I obviously cannot show my penis to anybody else. That seems to be a core part of almost every single one of those people that are getting out. It's like they decide, hey, you're a woman, here's my penis.
Yeah, that's a good campaign approach. I guess. Very timely.
It shows the state of things.
I mean, there's no arguing with the logic.
Nope.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Oh, there's a great bit here. Nestle defended the ad to a local TV station, saying, I think the ad was rather tame when it comes to the news stories that have come out, whether they are journalists, whether they're in Hollywood, or whether they're political representatives. We've heard some pretty lewd stories coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a damn fine point.
Yeah. So.
Yep. All right, so... oh, Lord. All right, so moving on from there and just sort of a good statement on just where we are in the world right now. Dictionary.com really announced what their word of the year was, and it was complicit.
I love those motherfuckers. Yeah. They're doing well the past few years.
Yeah.
I love Dictionary Twitter. Because they always chime in on just showing definitions of words that are big, like right at the moment. And then people get really mad that the dictionary is getting political. It's like they're just telling you what the word is.
That's what the word means. That's good, though. Complicit. And there are a lot of people who are that.
And they threw some shade leading up to it.
Yep.
And they talk about particular usage of it on dictionary.com as far as like interest. March 12th, the day after SNL released their complicit perfume commercial spoof. April 5th, the day after Ivanka Trump told CBS This Morning, "I don't know what it means to be complicit." And that one's the top on all of this. October 24th, the day Senator Jeff Flake announced his retirement with, "I will not be complicit."
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of more stuff here. But people should read that.
Yeah, so if you get a chance, look at that. There's just some very funny shit there. But moving on. So Apple, they have, you know, their Mac operating system, which is the era. And recently it was discovered that it has a really bad exploit in it that's allowing anyone to hack it far too easily than it should be.
Apparently, I don't know how they managed to do this, but they effectively just made it so that if you typed in the word root with as your username and then used a blank password, it would let you in.
That's not a good bullshit.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things where I think somebody just fat fingered a configuration file when they did the build, because it's like, wait a minute, root user shouldn't even be enabled.
Nope.
And it definitely shouldn't be enabled without a password. So
Especially when the whole point of your OS, it's simple enough for anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be taking some precautions to make sure they don't have to do anything further.
Yeah.
To protect themselves.
Yeah. So it took Apple 2 days to fix it. It's like, oh shit. And I'm wondering who got fired. That was a pretty bad one. And especially when they figured out that if you happen to use the remote desktop to connect to a Mac, yeah, that worked too. So that was bad. Yeah. But it's fixed now, so your Macs are safe, unless they haven't updated, and then they're not. So.
And let's be fair, probably 50% of the Mac users out there are not updating.
Yeah, no. There's a few people who see that update prompt and go, later, we'll do it later, and then they just keep putting it off, and they never do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whereas Windows, it will just flat out force you to do it.
It will. Right. Windows updates are... they're administered rectally most of the time.
We're going to update you in 15 minutes, whether you're ready or not. You better close your programs right now.
With ours, it's like I get the, "Mom, the keyboard's not working. I can't play this game. Nothing's working. I can't get online." Restart it. It's got updates. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it really does. It's like the whole computer just says, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
And the only way you know that anything is going on is by going and looking it up. Yep, it has updates.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no loop for that one.
Just got to do it, reboot,
right up
and
there,
it's
man.
Fine. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's just... You will be Bill Gates' bitch. It's
Although it's Satya Nadella. He's a much nicer person than Bill Gates.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So now this one's in other episodes of just weird electronic fuckery. As everybody knows, if you're a pilot for American Airlines, you can, of course, schedule vacations. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they do this electronically because, everybody else does. And Problem was, there was a weird glitch that allowed all of the pilots, and I do mean all of the pilots, to schedule the vacation in Christmas.
That could be a problem.
Yes, so they have no pilots for that week.
Who wants to be on vacation at Christmas?
Yeah.
Apparently, after this test, none of them do. So basically, they're having to do ransoms. So, hey, we'll give you time and a half if you cancel your vacation and decide to work. I assume they're going to probably have to keep going up from there.
Yeah. That guy's like, joke's on them, man. I want to get the fuck out of going to my family for Christmas.
Yeah.
So they've got thousands of flights that are hanging in the balance.
Yeah.
So imagine if you have a flight scheduled with American Airlines. You should look into your other options.
Yeah.
You might want to look at another airline that, you know, actually knows.
Maybe double book of a flight with another carrier just in case.
Yeah. Probably a safe idea. So.
Yeah. So,
cancellation fees. Those things are killer, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, imagine not paying attention to any of this. Just printing out your ticket, going in. It's like, what? Where are my flights at?
there's no pilot.
Yeah.
Where did they go? They all get abducted?
No, they're on vacation.
Yeah. All of them?
Yep, all of them.
Yeah, except for this motherfucker who doesn't like his sister-in-law.
Well, next up, so over in China, for a little while, there was a bike-sharing boom. Of course, bikes, you know, people over in China have always loved bicycles, and they've sort of been like a big deal for a long time, and then after a while, people just didn't really care anymore, and so the bubble bursts. And so now there is this giant graveyard in the middle of China exclusively for bikes.
And the great thing about the video is if you look at the size of the trucks and realize the scale of what, how many bikes are in this. So this all comes from one company.
Yeah.
Blue Go-Go. They went bankrupt. And there's some great shots of how many of these bikes there are on the sidewalks from these sharing companies.
Mm.
And so far, at least this one company has gone down. Others, I assume, have at least lost some business because you don't need all these fucking bikes.
No, you don't need that many.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, they've all taken the opportunity to try and cash in on this. And at least one of these companies has gone down.
Mm.
And this amazing just graveyard is... It looks more like a painting of some sort, but it's...
It looks like a giant pile of, like, belly button lint.
And
Because the whole picture, they had to go way back to be able to get the whole thing into the frame.
Yeah.
But once you actually get some more close-up shots, it's literally a shit ton of bicycles just piled up on each other.
Yeah. It's like, we can't do anything else with these.
There they are. So, now you're probably
in Chicago, man.
Mm, yeah.
People rent those blue bitches in Chicago all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little dumb.
I don't know if it says how many are in there.
Mm. Oh, there's got to be 1,000 in there.
So.
Belly button.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the good thing is most of that stuff can be recycled, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
it's not like a whole lot of metal and rubber.
Yeah. Yeah, bikes are mostly recycled.
It's like, yeah, they just create new jobs.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes.
Go through and strip all this stuff apart.
Yeah, so.
That's a way to do that.
Yeah, well.
Mm.
So, next up, we've got a story all the way from India. Yeah, so a group of 8 donkeys apparently got caught eating some expensive plants, I'm guessing, next to this building somewhere. And so they were arrested and put in jail for 4 days.
They arrested the donkeys.
Yeah, they arrested the donkeys.
Yep. That'll learn them.
Were they led by Nestor, the long-eared Christmas donkey?
Probably.
You guys know about him, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, now these are, you know, these are eight, you know, jail-hardened donkeys that they just let back on the street. I'm not sure anybody knows what they're in for now.
Yeah, so the saplings they ate are valued at about 60,000 rupees, which is the equivalent of $929 U.S.
That's not that expensive.
Apparently for this part of India, it was.
Yeah!
Hey, I was going to eat that.
I love this this sub-headline. Their desperate owner had asked the politician to intervene to save his asses.
That's a good one.
Their bail had been paid by a local politician from the ruling party. The head of the jail said these donkeys had destroyed some very expensive plants, which our senior officer had arranged for planting inside the jail. Despite warnings, the owner let loose his animals here, so we detained the donkeys. Imagine being in a town where the main concern is that these donkeys ate these plants we were going to plant inside our jail.
Yeah.
And then they put them in the jail so they could shit out said plants in the jail.
Yeah, there's that, too.
8 days of donkey shit, man? Oh, somebody had to clean days. That up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Eight donkeys, 4 days. Mm. That's still a lot of shit.
Yeah.
So. Oh. Moving on. Now we got just really weird story from Calgary. There was an Arnst installation that was, installed there. And it turns out that they were using a bunch of photographs of various comedians in the United Kingdom 100% without their permission.
Nope. And found from a very obscure flyer. Essentially came from... Where is it? The event.
It's called the Fringe brochure.
Yeah, Edinburgh Fringe Program of 2015. The artist's name is... Where is it at? I forget who it is. It involves a comedian named Bisha Ali, who had gotten a weird text from an old friend of hers saying that she thought she saw a weirdly large photo of her used in a public art installation in Calgary. Mm-hmm. Said, hey, Pixar didn't happen. And so she gets the pic back, and it says blurred out picture of her face with the words, I want love, over it. Mm. And apparently the artist in question is Derek Michael Besant. He got paid $20,000 for this art installation, stole all the pictures, claimed that he had interviewed these people walking by in this underpass, so it's like 12 pictures, 6 foot by 7 foot pictures put up in this underpass. Mm. I think four on each side. And so he supposedly interviewed these people, which obviously didn't happen when they're in the UK.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had specifically probably never been in that area. Mm. But yeah, so they started piecing together this stuff on Twitter, like, oh, this looks like my friend here. And there's a nice little tweet in there from Comedy Club for Kids that sort of pieced together all these different shots from the brochure with the pictures on the walls. And so you can see pretty much, yeah, they straight up took these pictures from there.
Yeah.
They made some weird changes in some of these. There's one guy that has had his hairline changed. He has long hair. It's on the bottom right, which is kind of more level on his actual head, but they angled it for some reason. Are they reversed pictures, or there's one that has like a little unicorn on her shoulder? They just cropped it out. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And yeah, it's pretty definitive what happened.
Yeah.
Basically, they had, or he asked for the art installation to be taken down and said, let's see, where's this quote at? I have initiated the temporary artwork being removed immediately and want to apologize to all concerned. In no way did I ever mean to hurt anyone involved, and I'm extremely sorry that this is the result of my misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I think he also said that he had seen these, almost like the pictures were cut out in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Thought they were all public domain. It's like you just got random pictures of people and thought they were public domain.
I don't think that's how that works.
And it's like, oh, you're going to base your whole art installation on these pictures you randomly found.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the thing you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
There's a great line where the Bish Ali said, my giant face is in your country, and that's weird. he is weird enough, has another installation going up in Ottawa, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
$200,000. And once they heard about this stuff, they basically made him agree to sign a new agreement saying, you're going to actually take all these pictures by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to steal them from anything, going to do all this work yourself and not, you know, plagiarize anything from anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, they're actually going to get actual work from him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have we have a few just dumbasses in Canada too, so sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now on to some bad news, folks. Guess what? Cookie dough is bad for you.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to live on this planet anymore. That's bullshit. That's bullshit.
Yeah, apparently it may be bad for you due to E. coli from uncooked flour.
Yeah, not just salmonella from the raw eggs.
Yeah.
But also apparently from E. coli in the flour.
You know what? Go big or go home.
I mean, I've eaten enough cookie dough until now, and it's been fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm guessing, you know, cookie dough in small amounts is probably not so bad.
Fine.
Yeah.
If you eat the entire bowl, you're
probably... Well, what amount of E. coli do you need to be stuck in the shitter for a week?
I mean, yeah.
It was worth it.
Yeah.
Yes,
it totally was. Worth it!
Dying.
Hello, motherfucker!
So, yeah, public service announcement.
All right.
Don't eat cookie dough. Just don't.
Raw.
Yeah.
If you're gonna eat cookie dough, do what normal people do.
Mm-hmm.
Slice it up and make cookies.
Yeah, that's usually a good idea.
That's what it's made for.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's a good rule and it served me well.
Mm-hmm.
That's like that's like getting a can of Coca-Cola and then trying to eat the can.
Oh, if you're a satyr, that makes perfect sense.
Oh. So, Alabama, state of Alabama's, their basketball team was playing against Minnesota. And Alabama's team apparently suffered so many ejections, they ended up having to play 3-on-5 against Minnesota.
Yeah, so the way this all happened... surprisingly, both teams are in the top 25 in the country, so they're both ranked, so this is a fairly big game.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that happened is Nate Mason in Alabama was ejected for a verbal spat. Later on, they had a scuffle, and they had, five players ejected that were on the bench because they all got off of the bench and stepped onto the court, which is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
So gone, the entire bench. They had another player who got a technical and his fifth foul, so he was kicked out. That put him down to 4. And the last guy got an ankle injury.
It was not a good day, Virginia.
No. So they had 3 guys facing against the full brunt of the team, pretty much.
Hmm.
And had to deal with that for the last 11 minutes and 37 seconds of the game.
Hmm. Yeah,
and they nearly
I'm kind
won.
Of surprised that there isn't some rule that you have to forfeit if you can't field a complete roster.
Yeah.
I think it is for the pros.
Hmm.
I don't think college has that
rule.
But yeah, they almost won. they outscored... Yeah, they outscored Minnesota 30-22 down the stretch.
Jesus.
I would even probably have watched that game. Holy shit.
Somehow there's three people guarding five.
I still got three.
And vice versa. You got five guys to stop three. And I guess the coach, whose name is Richard Pitino, he said one of the players in Alabama is Colin Sexton. Said Colin Sexton could beat a whole team by himself. He's just that good. Because he dropped 40 points in that game.
Jeez.
So, yeah, he almost beat a five-man team by himself, essentially.
Well, I think a few people's NBA draft stock just skyrocketed.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Holy shit.
It's like some NBA Jam situation.
Yeah.
It's pretty almost much. Like they should retire right now because they will probably never meet that, touch that ever again.
Yeah.
Well, you can't drop in the rankings, really, because they came in with a huge chip on their shoulder of having to fight for just to survive. Mm. Yeah, they lost
89-84. Oof. Oof. Well, anyway. In more sports news, some Tennessee football fans actually got rid of a new hire when they by using some hearsay from the Penn State Sandusky case.
Yeah, so this involved the Tennessee University football team.
Mm-hmm.
They had just recently fired their coach and were in the hunt for a new one. We're looking to actually hire Greg Schiano,
mm-hmm.
who used to coach Rutgers, sort of put them on the map before leaving for the pros, coached Tampa Bay. Did not do well there, and had been in Ohio State this past season. And they basically had the deal signed. We're going to announce it. And when Tennessee fans heard that the deal was done or nearly done, they decided to find whatever they could to try to discredit Greg Schiano, which included that he was on the staff at Penn State during the Sandusky stuff. And went off of this hearsay that has no proof at all, not even from any of the testimony that the various other coaches and such did during that. And basically said, did a lot of protesting and all that. They even painted one of the rocks. They have a whole line of tweets here on this article, but they spray painted on this rock, Schiano covered up child rape at Penn State.
Fuck. That's a hell of an accusation to make. Man. I mean, are there no repercussions for this?
No, he lost his job. He lost the job he was going to get.
Yeah, this is Tennessee here.
Yeah, and essentially they didn't give a shit about any of the Penn State stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They just cared that they didn't like the coach. And apparently all stems from the fact that Tennessee fans are kind of delusional and think they're going to get John Gruden. Who's was a really good coach in the NFL who does Monday Night Football and really likes that job enough he doesn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah.
But Tennessee fans essentially think, oh, we got an opening. Here comes John Gruden.
Yeah.
And essentially where this all has gone is essentially the AD has been fired. Mm. Now, a couple days later, essentially because one of their former coaches, Philip Fulmer, apparently came up with this idea of interfering with all of this, got him fired so he can become the AD. And now they're in a position where no coaches really want to go there.
Yeah, no fucking shit.
It's a huge shit storm.
Their fans are goddamn assholes. Psychos. They destroyed a man's life.
Hmm.
Yeah. Basically, he's probably not going to get another job. Because obviously nobody's going to want to investigate this stuff fully, and they don't want their fans doing the same thing.
Yeah. Mm.
American football is freaking insane.
Yeah. College football especially.
Yeah.
So. Damn near war has broken out over college football down here.
Mm. War has broken out.
Yeah.
The Auburn-Alabama stuff.
Uh-huh.
I forget which side has had the tree that was around for 150 years.
Uh-huh.
And one fan on the other side got so entrenched in this rivalry that he decided to just go poison the tree and killed it. Hmm. I think he got arrested. It's like,
I bet.
He fucking just destroyed this legendary tree at the school because he hated the other team so much.
Yep.
It just defies logic.
Yeah.
That is like, that is complete lizard brain shit right there.
Yeah. Well, next up, some nice but bittersweet news. A 14-year-old chef who unfortunately is suffering from a brain tumor is going to be hosting a traveling adventure show with Chef Rock.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. He was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 5, underwent 72 weeks of chemotherapy, but unfortunately the tumor is inoperable. So there's not really much else they can do for him, but from around that time at 5, he was cooking with his dad and grew to love it. Especially went to cooking competitions and actually won one of them. He applied for the Canadian Food Championships at Taste of Edmonton in the baking category. Ended up winning that, earned him a golden ticket to the World Food Championships in Alabama. Ended up finishing in the top 10 there in the baking category. And along the way, he met a bunch of famous chefs, and including Steve Casarino, better known as Chef Rock, who said, the kid said he has 8 TV shows. He's huge. He's the real deal. When he offered Jonathan Jobb, or no, this is somebody else, when offered Jonathan Jobb, this is like a dream come true. And I think Chef Rock has a quote here by saying, I like to consider myself relatively talented, and if a 14-year-old could put me in my place, that's the type of person we need working with us. We want to build young minds, and his young mind is light years ahead of everyone else his age. There's also other parts here talking about how he cooks dinner for his family every night. And so everyone in his family is overweight because it's so good. He talked about even the dog and the bird are overweight as well. And he just loves cooking so much and gets a chance to actually do this cool show. I forget where it's taking place. Or I guess it's traveling, yeah, so it's going to take place in various parts of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool opportunity for him.
Yeah. And, you know, he's probably not going to be around all that long, so he might as well get as much life living as he can.
Yeah. See, he donates his prize money from these competitions to make for sick children.
Yeah.
So that's one of the cool things. I think he also said that he's actually starting up his own restaurant. He's took a position at a new restaurant opening in Edmonton called Why Not Cafe and Bar. So he's going to be actually having a job there. That's a really cool story.
Yeah.
All there's right. Weird tweets from this, the woman that wrote this article. It's like, look at how he cuts this mushroom. it's like, okay, that's...
Yeah, that's how you're supposed to do that, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's 14.
So...
I was like, say yes, so.
I don't know. Apparently he was good enough that he gets to be on fucking TV now.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Next one just warms my heart. So the current Prime Minister of Denmark decided to give the current President Jokowi of Indonesia, a little gift. He's like, hey, I'll give this guy a gift. So what he gave him was a vinyl version of Metallica's Master of Puppets.
Yep.
Nice. Oh, is this the new one that just came out?
Yes, yeah, it's the box set.
That's the new box. Nice.
Signed by Lance Ulrich. Lars Ulrich.
Lars Ulrich, yeah.
Yeah. Just released on the 10th of November.
Yep.
So it has a bunch of extra stuff on it, as well as all the original songs. And he knew that the president of Indonesia was a big metalhead.
Yep.
And he's got the box set on vinyl. I mean,
yep.
I wonder if he has a turntable.
Hey. Hell yeah.
He does by now, if not.
Yeah.
In return, the present he got was a Renkang, a traditional dagger from I don't know how to pronounce this. A-C-E-H. I'm not going to try and butcher it.
Yeah, no.
But it's an Indonesian dagger, so.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your Metallica, here's my dagger.
I think Rasmussen got the short end of the stick there.
Yeah, probably.
But just a quick reminder, Indonesia is the largest Muslim country on the planet.
Hey.
As the largest Muslim population of anywhere else.
Yeah.
And the president is a metalhead, yeah, so.
So, there you go.
Take of that what you will.
Yeah.
All right, so we got some science news here. Over in northwest China, they discovered 215 well-preserved pterosaurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's at least what they've found so far. I think there's going to be a lot more, but they also found 16 embryos that are almost fully contained.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of cool new stuff to examine and sort of learn more about how this stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
Are they guessing that they did like mass nestings like some birds currently do? Is that what they're thinking? That's cool.
Yeah, they basically found 215 of these within a single sandstone block that they dug up.
Shit, man.
Yeah, that's
Pterosaur Eden. Nice.
Yeah. Jurassic Park. Here we come.
That's the thing, though. That whole concept falls apart really quickly when you look a little too closely at it.
Still.
But anyway. I love this next one. Oh, I love this next one. Sesame Street did a parody of Stranger Things, calling it Sharing Things.
They turned it into, you can tell the people that write Sesame Street are big fans of Stranger Things because they get a lot of details right here. So essentially it's about the Cookie Gorgon, played by Cookie Monster, who has eaten all the cookies in his dimension and has to come over into the real world and find more. And they make a reference to Barb still being over in the other dimension. There's like the kids go on trick-or-treat. Jim Hopper is a rabbit.
Yes.
Because of course. and at a certain point, the Cookie Gorgon realizes he stands out, so he changes his little flaps to flower petals. And he learns how to share things instead of keeping it all for himself.
That's a pretty cool reference to a show that probably wouldn't want to let your kids watch.
You know what? I don't know what all these fucking fifth graders are watching, but they get on Hangouts and they're yapping in my freaking living room. Why don't you let Jacob watch Stranger Things? Are you kidding? I want him to sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So way more fifth graders watching Stranger Things than I had imagined.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, speaking of which, and let's be honest, we all saw this. Stranger Things has been renewed for a third season.
Yeah. No surprise there.
Also, water is red and the sky is blue.
Yeah.
Are all the episodes of season 2 out so I can actually watch now?
Yeah, they put them all out day one.
All right. Oh, you kidding?
Yeah, the cool thing they did for this announcement is they put up a Twitter poll. Say, hey, do you want a season 3 of Stranger Things? I think it only got 60% said yes. Like, just people knew they weren't going to fucking decide by a poll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they just tried to fuck with it. But they also, I guess there's a Stranger Things writer's room account.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Netflix sounds like, hey, we need you to do more stuff. It's like, ah, fine. Just lots of fun stuff there. But yeah, there's some interesting data here. 15.8 million viewers watched season 2 premiere within 3 days of its launch. This is all from Nielsen ratings. Nearly 11 of them were among the key adult demographic of 18 to 49. So that might be where you're seeing your sub 18 kids.
Yeah.
That and old people. Nielsen also found that 361,000 Netflix subscribers streamed the entire 9-episode second season within 24 hours of its debut. So there's all the crazy people like me.
Okay.
Yeah, Stranger Things 2 was also crowned the most popular show in the country, according to data company Parrot Analytics.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. It's going to be really hard to be on the internet without having had watched it, because there's spoilers, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They don't mean for them to be, and it's just, you know.
Yeah, but they just are, so.
People are
idiots. I gotta get on shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. They have to, I guess the kids, the group of kids from the show got paid about $30,000 per episode for first and second seasons, along with a bonus. So they got paid pretty well for that.
Right. That's not a bad gig.
Yeah. The cast is signed for 6 years.
Yeah.
Talent reps say renegotiation will happen early 2018. So I assume that they will be getting all set up for season 3. Hopefully have that out by next Halloween.
Yep. So
that would be sooner would be okay.
All right. Well, next up, we've got a story from the comics world that is just bizarre. So about 13 years ago, there was this high-profile writer by the name of Akira Yoshida. Yoshida was supposedly a Japanese writer who had originally written for manga publishers, and then at some point he went to comic conventions in the U.S. He ended up befriending the likes of Pat Lee, which back in the day, the Lee brothers were kind of hot shit in the comic book world. And he actually, because of that friendship, he started working in American comics. And because of that, he managed to be working for Dreamwave, Dark Horse, and Marvel. He wrote 12 issues of Thor, Son of Asgard, 6 issues of X-Men, Age of Apocalypse, 5 of Elektra the Hand, 5 of Wolverine, Soul Taker, 5 of X-Men, Kitty Pryde, Shadow and Flame, 5 of X-Men, Fantastic Four, and a bunch of one-shots. And then suddenly he just vanished off the face of the earth. Well, now we know why. Because it turned out Akira Yoshida was in fact a synonym for what is now Marvel's new EIC, a gentleman by the name of C.B. Sibulski.
The thing is, the Marvel people supposedly met Akira Yoshida, had a meeting with him. They so just assumed the translator was Akira Yoshida.
But, yeah, so...
Well, wasn't there a conspiracy theory going around that he really wasn't Japanese? And it turned out to be true?
Yeah,
there was a conspiracy theory, and the funny thing is, C.B. Sibulski, there had actually been some people from early on who had been pointing the finger at him as being possibly Yoshida. Then back in 2015, Brian Cronin was asked this same question, and he actually said that as far as he could tell, Akira Yoshida is not a synonym. He said he actually got to meet – he met up with Mike Martz, who's one of the editors over at Marvel, and said, quote, "You bet. I've had lunch with a guy. Very nice guy. He's a very cool guy. When we had lunch, he showed me pictures of his immense Godzilla memorabilia collection. I was jealous. Well, there's one conspiracy theory down the drains." Wrong.
That's like elite level trolling.
Keep in mind, this is back when Bill Gemas was head of Marvel. So, you know, there was a whole bunch of just weird shit going on in Marvel back then. And Marvel executives, they straight up said, "No, Shuda is a real person. We've talked to him, you know, here in the offices." And so you're finding out, well, why did they have to go through all this shit in the first place? Well, for whatever reason, back in the day, Marvel Comics had this policy of not allowing Marvel staffers to write or draw books. Or at least if approved, not to get paid over their salary for doing so. So basically they had to come up with these synonyms to work for it.
Pseudonyms.
Pseudonyms, yes.
Yeah, it's all right.
And, you know, I mean, this is, you know, keep in mind, this is before Joe Q was made editor in chief. So,
yeah.
So, God, that's just, that is just weird.
The weird thing is, he actually confessed all this to the head of Marvel, and they essentially forgave him and made him editor in chief.
Yeah.
Well, damn.
Yeah, okay, no biggie. Well, like, you're editor in chief now.
Yeah. I was like, you wrote some good books, so why not?
Yeah. Made for a good story.
Yep.
Yes. Well,
and finally.
Finally, we now have the first trailer for Avengers Infinity War, and goddamn, does Thanos look weird.
Yeah, the internet has seized upon that.
I mean, for the record, that is how he looks in the comics. He's always looked... His proportions have always been really off, but... Is it just me, or does he look a little too much like Joss Whedon?
Oh, I saw somebody Photoshop him to look like Hank Hill. Gave him hair, gave him, like, the uniform. It's like, okay, that's the way you could go with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, if you like the Avengers, you're probably going to like this, because it's definitely Avengers.
It's going to have all the heroes.
It's all of the things in one.
It's all of them. Just all of them. It's going to be, depending on the talents of the writer, will either be absolutely unbelievably mind-blowing amazing, or will be just the biggest shit show you can think of.
Yeah.
That is a lot of shit to cram into 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hour movie. You're dealing with, you know, at least 20 characters,
and all their storylines coming from their most recent movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out who's directing this. Anthony Russo and Joe Russo. Anthony Russo did The Winter Soldier, Captain America, both the Captain America movies, Civil War as well.
Which were all good.
Also did producer on Community. Okay, that's weird.
That's strange.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I do believe we got a show, folks.
Yep.
So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, something you want to ask us, something you want to write into the show, maybe you have some weird, crazy political manifesto you want us to read, or you just have a question or comment to make, maybe of nice constructive criticism, or really mean criticism, frankly, anyone will work, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Also, on top of iTunes, you can subscribe to our little podcast via Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and everywhere where non-written, completely made-up shit like ours is produced.
Yay.
And, yes, in fact, our listening numbers are, in fact, growing.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. We have no idea why.
Yep.
Please tell us, because I'm just as confused as anyone else here.
Well, we will continue.
People have awful taste, seriously.
Yeah. And there goes all our
But we do thank you.
Yeah.
Went from 110 to 0, just like that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, now we'll all have to get real jobs. Who am I kidding? We do this shit for free.
Yeah.
So, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Teresa Sam, I'd like to say good night, get some sleep out there.
This guy sucks.